American industry is revving up the economic engine.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Scott Jagow. There's a pleasant surprise in the government's latest numbers on industrial output. They're up, unexpectedly, by 0.2%. The Federal Reserve reports the best gain in manufacturing output in 10 months. Meantime, the dollar is up as oil prices continue their slide. It was only a month ago the cost of a barrel of oil hit an all-time high of $147. Today, it's down another $2 to $113 as demand drops and supplies grow. And thanks to the stronger dollar, the long commodities boom appears to be waning at last, led this morning by gold. The precious metal fell below $800 an ounce for the first time this year. Ashley Milne-Tite reports on what's going on.
Commodity prices have been on a steep decline lately. Demand for things like oil, copper and wheat has been ebbing as economies slow down. Jack Scoville of Price Futures Group in Chicago says many investors had turned to commodities because the dollar had been so weak, causing fears about inflation. But the dollar's recent rally has changed that.
There is less need to hold commodities in your portfolio. So you're seeing some liquidation, and gold being kind of a bellwether commodity for the economy is seeing the selling as much as any commodity around that you can find.
He says commodity prices got too high and the market was due for a correction. But he says this is just a pause. As prices fall to more reasonable levels, he predicts demand will once again pick up and the whole cycle will begin again. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
That good news on lower prices for oil and other commodities is providing a ray of sunshine on Wall Street. The Dow Industrials are up 90 points, 0.75%. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are each out of the gate with a gain of 0.2%. But the rising dollar is giving some investors across the pond mixed feelings. The Paris CAC 40, which had climbed almost 1.25%, has trimmed that gain to less than 0.5%. London's FTSE is now off almost 0.33%. Frankfurt's DAX is down 0.25%. Louisiana shuts down its legal cockfighting operations today for good. It's the last state to ban the sport. To some in Cajun country, though, it's the end of a rich tradition that was very profitable in small towns. Kate Archer Kent of Red River Radio reports from Shreveport, Louisiana.
New Orleans-based attorney Art Lentini proposed several bills to ban cockfighting during his 12 years as a state senator.
Some of the venues in Louisiana had over 700 people at events, so it was pretty profitable. Some of the birds, I understand, went for thousands of dollars, you know, up to $5,000.
Lentini thinks the ban will force cockfights underground. That idea disappoints Sydney May Durand. She's a former state legislator who attended many cockfights over the years. She doesn't want her state to seem barbaric, but she says cockfights packed arenas and united families.
I think it's sort of a sad day. It was part of the history, and a lot of people will realize that there won't be some money that has been floating around anymore.
Durand says no one ever kept track of how much money cockfighting generated, but she thinks hotels and restaurants in the southern part of the state will do a lot less weekend business from now on. In Shreveport, Louisiana, I'm Kate Archer-Kent for Marketplace.
The sixth Harry Potter film was due at Thanksgiving, but Warner Brothers is delaying Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince until July 2009. That way it can challenge next summer's big-screen adaptation of Land of the Lost from Universal. It seems the screenwriter's strike has delayed other movies that might have otherwise been able to compete around that time. And since its Batman sequel, The Dark Knight, is already the studio's most successful title ever in North America, Warner can afford to push Potter back to next year.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, supporting efforts that help save lives lost from sudden cardiac arrest. More on SCA risks and response at suddencardiacarrest.org.
People in the state of Vermont get most of their power from just two sources, and existing contracts have locked in relatively cheap rates. That's about to change, though. So what's the alternative? Well, they don't call it the Green Mountain State for nothing. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Vermont Public Radio's Jane Lindholm reports.
Two-thirds of all the electricity in Vermont comes from a huge hydroelectric plant in Canada and a nuclear plant in southern Vermont, owned by a company in New Orleans. When contracts with these two out-of-state entities expire in a few years, Vermont's rates could almost double, and residents are getting nervous. At the scenic waterfalls in the center of Middlebury, Anders Holm thinks he's found an answer for his town of about 8,000 people. The local doctor is resurrecting the Middlebury Electric Company, which used the falls in the late 18 and early 1900s to generate all of the town's electricity. Holm says today the falls could light up as many as 500 homes.
Every kilowatt hour that you produce locally is one less kilowatt hour that you have to buy from Massachusetts or wherever. And certainly I'd like to think that the kind of electricity we'd be producing here is very low impact and supported by the community.
Not just the community, but also town officials. John Tenney chairs the Middlebury Board of Selectmen.
The cost of this power would be a reliable cost, and we would not be in a position that was dictated by outside interests that we could not control.
There's still a lot to be figured out. Anders Holm estimates construction costs could top $4 million. The town's tax burden is already high, so Holm needs to find outside investors before the select board will approve the plan. And that's the sticking point. But Holm and Tenney both seem confident that investors and grants will be forthcoming and that Middlebury could reap the benefits of small hydropower by 2012, just as the state's big energy contracts expire. Local environmentalist and writer Bill McKibben wrote the first mainstream book about climate change 20 years ago. Now, standing at the base of the falls, McKibben says he wants to see this kind of downsizing nationwide.
We have the sun, we have the wind, we have the water. These are the kind of small sources that could give us not only enough energy, but a kind of new economy.
Most officials think small-scale generation will never completely replace the reliable base power from large corporations. But as Anders Holm will tell you, every little bit helps. In Middlebury, Vermont, I'm Jane Lindholm for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. You'll find replays of all our programs at marketplace.org. You can also send us your thoughts. Just click on the contact link. Thanks very much for listening this morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.